All right. Minimize. Maximize. Optimize. Poke my eyes. Ow! Right, here we go. Welcome to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. It's episode number 262. I am your host, James Gilmore, and joining me is Peter Willington.
Hi.
And Keith Andrew.
Hello.
See that surprise in my voice?
It's been a couple of weeks, hasn't it?
It has. It's been a little while. You've been gallivanting off around the world, as is your wont from time to time. This time it was Amsterdam, wasn't it?
It was my lovely Netherlands, my friends in the Netherlands.
I've heard about your Netherlands. They're quite popular from what I hear. Everyone's had a visit.
Hey, Amsterdam? I bet you got up to all sorts of
shenanigans.
Oh, Amsterdam.
Yeah, the less talk about what I got up, the better, I think.
Yeah. Well, I hear it's quite kind of right-wing now. They've gone the other way. They've, like, not letting people go and smoke copious amounts of dope and all that stuff.
You can pretty much do whatever you want.
Well, that's how it was when I last went there, and I was disappointed to discover
Without wanting to name any substances, myself and one of our colleagues were just about to head out for dinner, and it was raining, so I had my umbrella, and I was looking quite British. Mm. And then we got offered fizzy pop. Or something else, something that would give you a lift.
Herbal refreshments.
And I thought, well, no, worse than that.
Oh.
That's a few steps up from that. And I just thought, I've got an umbrella. What kind of person goes out and buys that kind of stuff with an umbrella? If I was like 3K, you know, if I was easy and like, you know, were into drugs, I wouldn't care if I was a bit wet, would I? So.
Well, no, umbrella might be one of those kind of drug dealer symbols where you put your umbrella up and that means that you're holding or not holding. Or
Christ, well, that means Manchester is full of them then.
Hold on a second. You're saying that if you are concerned with how much rain might fall on your head, there is no way that you might be a drug
user. All I will say is I don't remember seeing an umbrella in Trainspotting, and you know, and it rains a lot in Scotland. They just don't care about that, do they? They're, you know, a bit more free and easy.
What? No, they're just accustomed to the climate. That's why most Scottish people you meet have gills and fins and whatnot.
I think we could outdo them here, to be honest.
With all the rain. Should we talk about the rain? Because we're British and that's what we're
expecting. Let's talk about the rain.
It's been flooding. I can't believe it.
Right, flooding. It's sunny one minute and bloody rain in the next. That wasn't even an accent. I'm not going to do that anymore. Oh, dear. Right, okay. So, now that we're all back in the room, a slightly less controversial week this week, but there's been a hell of a lot of new releases and games. Some more controversial than others. Let's talk about them, why not? First up, Angry Birds Rio's gotten 26 brand new levels. I suspect this has something to do with the fact that the movie, Rio, upon which it is based, is about to get a sequel. I saw the trailer for it in front of the Lego movie that I went to see this week, which is very, very good and subverts many expectations.
What, the Lego movie or the trailer for Rio 2?
The Lego movie. The trailer for Rio 2 was suitably pap. well, I've seen the first one. It's just standard talking animals nonsense and, you know, the usual DreamWorks sub-Pixar stuff.
No,
the only good
like
one they did was How to Train Your Dragon.
Did they do Cloudy with a Shade of Meatballs?
No, that was different. That was a different studio entirely. Uh-huh. In fact, the guys who did Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs were the guys behind the Lego movie.
It's a
pair of directors, and they're extremely, extremely smart guys. And yeah, the Lego movie's insane. First half an hour is just like jaw on the floor trying to keep up with what's going on. And the director.
Sounds like they've found the building blocks for success.
Woo! Oh, Keith.
So glad you're back.
I wasn't expecting a result to that response to that. I thought that was going to be deadpan, but
gone the other way. If we just radio silence, no, we had to just scream in order to sort of exercise the evil of that pun from our systems. Anyway, this Angry Birds Rio update, 26 new levels. It's called the High Dive update because some of them set underwater. You got to smash through market stalls and shops and all that as usual. But there are also dolphins which are being trapped by a filtration system or something. It's got something to do with the sequel, and that's why they're updating it now. So you can get it for free, obviously. And I don't know if they'll actually release a full blown sequel when Rio 2 comes out. I suspect not. They'll probably just keep adding on to this one. Also, Autumn Dynasty is free back on the App Store and free because it was taken off a while back. Because apparently, according to the developers, their contract with Bulky Pix, the publisher they were working with, expired. And for that reason, it got taken down from the App Store, which is unusual. I haven't heard of that happening.
Yeah, that's quite strange.
An awful lot, no. But because the sequel's coming out very soon, which is Autumn Dynasty Warlords, I think it's called. It's coming out in the next couple of weeks. They have re-uploaded the original game into a different account. So if you are an existing player and you still have the game, then what they tell you to do is go over and download it from this new account. So just search it on the App Store, and you can also find it on Pocket Gamer. It's called like Autumn Dynasty -RTS, I think. Now, but for the first week it's available as of today, it's free for anyone who pre-existingly bought the game. They can download it again free of charge, and that way they can stay up to date with the new updates as they come. But also, if you haven't played it before, you can download it for free for a week, which we'd recommend you do, because it's dead slick. It's kind of done in that painterly a style that Okami is done with, all brush strokes and feudal medieval art and stuff. And it's also a very good real-time strategy game to boot. So go and grab that for free now. Prepare yourself for the sequel. And finally, Fish Labs has updated Galaxy on Fire Alliances, which I assume you're all still playing.
It's good. Don't take the mickey. It's a good game.
I never said it was bad.
It's a good game.
I'm questioning the... the size of its following.
They kind of don't exist anymore, do they, Fish Labs?
Well, no, because
strange time for an update.
Michael Shashade sold it to someone else.
They got bought by Koch Media, is that right?
Yeah, and now they're going off to make console games, which is very funny.
What? That was really weird, wasn't it? That was a weird statement. They're going off to console now, but like, I seem to remember like a year and a half ago, one of the lead guys behind Galaxy on Fire said console's dead.
Anytime you would go to any Fish Lab talk anywhere in the world, they would harp on about how mobiles were just as capable as console now, and people didn't really need consoles anymore. It was all about mobile, and they were doing it, and they were leading it, and all this. But apparently, that was rubbish.
Which is weird, because their previous, the franchise, Galaxy on Fire, apart from this Alliances one, which is one of those online resource gathering, massively multiplayer things, the previous games, which were flight sims, third-person flight sims, were very console-y.
Mm.
They're games that you would think, I'd quite like to play that with a joypad and a big screen.
They always argued that hardware-wise, you know, mobiles are only a few years behind console, and people wouldn't need these big things in the living room. And they were going to be the guys that everyone turned to, because you could do console and mobile. And now it's like they've said, no, we were just joking. We actually want to do console all the time.
But they have decided to update it. It's called the Space Travelers Update. And what it adds is a star map, which lets you kind of trace the positions that your ships are at and travel between points, a plot travel paths. Apparently, this is a good thing. I only played it a very little amount, but that's a new thing you can do. And there's also a bunch of achievements and some extra technologies to research to make your fleet even more fleety than it was previously. So hooray for that. It's awards season, which is sort of a meaningless thing to say, because it's not a season, really, is it? It's just a bunch of people giving small statuettes to one another in shiny rooms with big lights. I don't really care much for them, personally. So I've kind of shot my own feature in the foot there just before I start.
Did you watch the Brits?
Which is good. No, I wouldn't do that. I don't watch television, and that show's not for me anymore.
I don't know what it is anymore. It's a very strange show.
Well, I know it's got James Corden in it, so immediately, yes. I'm not going to watch it.
Yes.
And, you know, it's the Brit Awards. It's what's it called? Katy Perry and whatnot. And so
she was on. Yeah, she was on.
Exactly. And that's
in fact, the leading, all the people on stage, so we had Katy Perry, we had Beyonce, we had Bruno Mars, we had Pharrell Williams. You know, that great selection of British artists that we all love. You know, that you expect the Brits to support. It was
It's for the kids. It's not really for us or anything. But yeah, it's the Brits. Got the Oscars coming up. You've had the some BAFTAs, some movie BAFTA things, some Golden Globes are all probably happening now, but we don't care any about that because games, the IMGAs are about to happen and the nominees have been announced. And I was just looking over it today, the story's been put up on Pocket Gamer, and it just made me go, ooh, there were some really good games released last year and also this year, which is a really nice thing to see. And I'm finding it difficult to look at the console list and be equally inspired.
Yeah,
I know I'm perhaps a bit biased, but
2014 is to mobile what 1998 was to home consoles and PCs.
What came out in 98?
Metal Gear Solid, one of the Final Fantasies, I believe Deus Ex, Half-Life.
Not bad.
But yeah, I mean, genuinely, like, I think this year, in terms of mobile, you look at the stuff that's mobile and also indie, you know, like, if you take those two sort of sectors that traditionally people have sort of sidelined and gone, I'm not real games.
You hang out with some strange people, Wellington.
I was about to say, that sounds nothing like James. I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, you're so mean. But you look at those and you think, hold on, there are some good games there.
Well, some really good ones. I mean, like, the list have come up, and obviously these are all mobile games at the moment, but we're talking about games like, perhaps, Year Walk, which was released by Samogo, which is that first-person sort of first-person single-plane scroller horror thing, which I played and really, really liked. It was excellent. You have Papa San Grey 2, again in the horror realm, which is that audio-based horror, entirely audio, where you move your eye device around and, like, shoot things that you can hear in your audio field. It's very, very peculiar, very unique, but rather lovely. Room 2, one of my personal favorites the past year, that's been nominated for awards. You got Bleck, which is that clever dot puzzler thingy doodad. Device 6.
You have to shout that.
Yeah, I did. Because it was probably, that's probably my favorite of all of them.
I've still got to play that, actually.
I mean, it's short and everything, but that made a huge impact in terms of, like, that's really smart. Really, really smart.
Similarly, we covered on Biz Black Bar, which is up in the same thing, which people liked. Again, one I've not played.
Haven't played that, but Harry was a huge, staunch supporter of it. Mm. He thought it was great, which is about, like, inserting text into these documents with redacted areas in them, isn't it? And apparently it's quite sad and sort of touching.
My favourite game of last year, not just on mobile, but on anything, is also up. Do you know what that is?
Is it iCycle?
No, that's a good one, actually. No. I do like iCycle.
Is it Tearaway?
Ziff.
It's on a Vita. Who's got one of those? Fish Out of Water.
Oh yeah, you were the Fish Out of Water man, which is the other game to come out from the Half Brick lot, isn't it?
I heart Half Brick and Fish Out of Water. It has fish with funny faces.
And that's it. And they bounce along the sea.
Yeah, that's all you need.
Didn't catch the same traction as your Jetpack Joyride or whatever, but man, did it make Keith happy.
Yeah, no, it didn't do. I didn't think it did anywhere near as well as anyone was hoping, actually. But I thought it was... I loved it. It made me happy. And not many things do.
Yeah, this is true. Bar outside of Kylie Minogue and a really, really nice coffee.
Yeah, those two things together as well. Yeah.
Kylie Minogue swimming in a vat of espresso. Or I should say espresso, because espresso is not a thing.
No, that's a British thing, isn't it?
It's a British thing. I love how you say British in an American accent.
How do you say
British.
Yeah.
British.
Yeah,
British.
I just like the fact that the one word that you probably should say in a British accent, you say British.
British? Yeah. I guess I say it with a D.
You travel too much, Keith. This is why.
Oh my God, you're so British.
You see, watch too many terrible
travel
American
broadens
say-bops.
The mind, and you can't do that if you want to stay.
Broadens the mind and retards the mouth, as they say.
I don't know what you're saying about foreigners there, James, but I don't want any part of that.
He's not talking about foreigners. He's talking about travelers.
As well as the IMGAs, I'm not going to even acronym it. As well as those awards, the BAFTAs have also been announced. Your British Academy Games Awards, which consists of games from all over the gaming world, but increasingly more so now, also contains mobile games. There was a time when mobile games didn't really get a look in, and it was always console games and, you know, Gears of War 3, getting nominated. But now you just have to have a look at the list. In all the genres, games, action, and adventure genre, you got Lego, blah, 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 you got Last of Us, you got Grand Theft Auto, and also here, look, Badland, from the Frogmind Studios, which we didn't like as much as everyone else, but whatever. Game innovation. What have you got? Grand Theft Auto V. Yeah, Stanley Parable. Blah, blah, blah. Oh, what's this? Yearwalk. Yearwalk from mobile. That's been nominated as well. Mobile and handheld nominations are pretty much in line with the iJar ones. So Tearaway, Room 2, Badland. Plants vs. Zombies 2 keeps being nominated.
Yeah.
Now, that was a thing that just happened one week for me and then just went away because I didn't like the energy system and there were loads of people defending it and I couldn't get on with it because I completed the first section of it, which is like 11 or 12 stages, and then it went, you can't unlock the next stage until you go back and play them all again.
Now, if we were to hypothesize what the awards team selecting these games were looking for in terms of Plants vs. Zombies 2.
Yes.
What process is it that like somebody puts their hand up and goes PVZ2?
It's weird actually. I'm not sure what the process is because the people who choose the winner are just handed these options. So, well, no, actually, that's not true. Actually, no, you do get a wider selection than that.
Yeah. Keith speaks from experience as he has judged in the past the BAFTA Awards. He's been on the panel.
Yeah, I'm getting confused, actually. I think when I did it last year, we had, like, I did the handheld and mobile category, and I think we had a total of about 15.
Mm-hmm.
And then the process was that ones that didn't have enough support were kind of dropped off.
Right.
And then you ended up debating the final six, as it were. So, yeah, that's... yeah. But I'm not sure how they decide, initially, that batch that gets sent to the people on the panel, who decides what's on those ones. I would have thought there had been some kind of chart positioning kind of thing that comes into play.
Well, I imagine the downloads have still been pretty massive for Plants vs. Zombies 2.
Yeah, yeah.
But and the game played beautifully. It was just the energy system that sort of put me off, as it does with a lot of those games.
Have you noticed on this BAFTA page how many games are made by this great developer called Development Team?
I know, that is good. They appear to have done away with the whole idea of
sweat
adding
the board. This development, we need to hire them.
They're incredibly prolific development team. It's like it's like various artists on Spotify. Have you heard them? They're brilliant, prolific. I would say. But yeah, they've got a lot of good nominations for good games, apart from maybe Plants vs. Zombies 2. But yeah, Device 6 is there. Ridiculous Fishing, which I started playing recently. And I know you had a, like, I don't get this thing reaction with it, Keith. And I, for my shame, hadn't played it for, apart from like 10 seconds when it first came out. And I sort of get it. I did play it and like the three games in one thing. And it does feel very compulsive and it's beautifully presented.
No, I get it. I just don't get it. I totally get it, but I kind of don't get it.
What Ridiculous Fishing?
Yeah, yeah. It's
a quality product. Like it's very well put together. It's
everything Vlambeer do has a sheen to it.
Yeah, it's one of the best 8 out of 10 games I've played. Like it works, and it's quite compulsive and all of those nice things, but. But I think it was also a little. I think it also was kind of zeitgeisty as well.
Yeah, no, it were definitely. Yeah, I mean, and then they're masters at that. They're masters at. I mean, the whole way that obviously they would never wish that all their games continually get clones. But this came up at Casual Connect actually in one of the talks. The way they are able to turn it round and get the community behind them into saying, you know, we're launching this game that's been cloned, and it just, you know, that any game they put out is automatically got a certain amount of following. It's not going to be Angry Birds, but you know, it's always going to get a certain amount of downloads. They're very clever. They understand how this social stuff works, really.
One game that didn't feature in the awards, and we got to talk about it very briefly again, and we're going to talk about it later because Keith wants to, is Flappy Bird. That's not in anyone's awards at the moment, although it might have won an award in Keith's car. I don't know. We'll find out. But I'm mentioning it now because ever since it was taken down, and even while it was still live, you had a billion clones appearing. I'm going to say that generally and not highlight a specific game. But, you know, a million games called Flappy Pigeon and Flappy Kipper and Flappy...
Careful.
Yeah, I know. But a million of those games appeared in its wake, attempting to capitalize on the huge success that Flappy Birds had. I keep saying birds because of Angry Birds. Flappy Bird, there was only one. But don't bother trying anymore, apparently. Because Google and Apple have both been saying any game that's released with Flappy in the title, or any game that's submitted, it's not going to get passed. Get stuffed. We're not going to put them up anymore. Because obviously it's just trying to capitalize on something silly, and apparently is in violation of point 22.2.
What's strange about this is that so Flappy Bird isn't on there anymore. So lots of developers have been saying, you're accusing me of mimicking another game on the store. It isn't on the store. Mm-hmm. And I think they kind of have a point there. Also, as other people, as Mark actually, PG editor Mark pointed out, there are still scores of games with the word Flappy on the top of there popping up every day. I mean, it's one of these Apple things where they never say, you have to guess. And the deduction has been that these games have been pulled because they're mimicking Flappy Bird. But is that why they've been pulled?
The line they're given, because some people have attempted to put their own, you know, Flappy Squirrel up on there, and then they get the notification from Apple saying, nope, we're not going to do it. And a couple of them who have been vocal about it say, well, Apple cited us, this point 22.2, which pertains to apps that contain false, fraudulent, or misleading representations. And the suggestion is obviously, oh, you're trying to make it look like Flappy Bird when it's not. It's Flappy Squirrel. And we all know squirrels don't flap, apart from the flying ones. And they don't even flap, they glide. So, counts.
But by that kind of reckoning, they could pull Angry Birds to being a castle, you know, crasher clone, couldn't they? I mean,
it's not called Castle Crashers or Castle Crasher Birds.
But yeah, but I mean, he's not done a king. He's not taken out any protection on the word Flappy. King, for better or worse, the trademark of candy is theirs, and they're setting about making sure no one else is using it, whether the game's before or after. And you know, they're doing that off their own back. This guy has not, as far as I'm aware, put out a trademark on Flappy or Bird or Flappy Bird, and yet Apple are taking it on their own back to go and do this. It's very strange. The way Apple chooses things that it gets involved in and things that it doesn't is completely bizarre. And you think for a company that size, it's almost as if it's being run by one guy in his bedroom just making snap decisions and thinking, oh, we've got to do this, got to do this.
It can seem somewhat arbitrary at times, can't it? Which battles they choose to wage and which they don't. Interestingly, you mentioned the whole Candy Crush thing. And we talked about it a few weeks back, certainly Peter and I did, about the fact that King had already trademarked the word candy and were also trying to do the same thing with Crush. Or the phrase Candy Crush, and then patent anything remotely to do with it. And Saga, trying to patent Saga as well. Mm. And then since we've talked about that, this guy popped up online saying, oh yeah, I created this game called Candy Swipe like 2 years before the other one came out, and it appears that King has basically lifted my game and just stolen the entire concept, including the name, some of the fonts, some of the art style, and that is what Candy Crush Saga is.
Yeah.
And now King are trying to sue him.
We got into contact with a lawyer about this earlier in the week, because obviously a lot of the press coverage about when a company gets the size of King, you know, it's almost like EA, anything they do is perceived as being wrong. Mm. So we kind of asked, and actually when you dig deeper, this guy who made this Candy Swipe, he actually started the ball rolling. When Candy Crush was released, he put out a challenge, essentially, to King using the word candy.
Yeah,
you know, it's like a red rug to a bull. He's kind of gone, hey, you look at me here. My game's got candy in it as well. Now, so he owns the trademark to Candy Swipe, but then he tried to get King to stop using the word candy in their game name.
Mm.
So actually, he is just as guilty. He's trying to do exactly the same thing that now they've flipped it. And they're trying to take the word candy away from him because he was trying to take the word candy away from them.
Well, I think arguably, certainly in terms of battling for names and saying, I own the word candy and all that stuff, that's all a bit, it can get a bit daft and people can go, come on, you can't own the word candy. It's more the game issue. It's when you put the two games side by side with the assets and the logos and everything, and you go, I think his gripe is not so much that they were trying to take candy, but you've stolen my game.
Well, yeah, but they haven't, have they? I mean, they're not the same. His game is I downloaded it earlier in the week. His game is you have to draw out, trace out with your finger lines of matching candy, whereas obviously Candy Crush is more like the Bejeweled, where you're literally moving them around to line them up. And neither of those ideas is any way original. He's one also, I mean, as Matt, who works for Biz, pointed out, I can't remember the product he cited, but the font that he's used in Candy Swipe is actually a font that's used by a candy brand in the US. So he's already mimicking he's trading off the back of someone else's brand to sell, and he's got away with it essentially because candy swipe hasn't been this massive, huge thing, and probably the whoever this candy manufacturer is hasn't noticed. So you're on dodgy ground if you take those two ideas that isn't an original game, and he's also kind of already being a little bit cheeky with the name and branding. To then say to King, who, yes, they're using the candy name and it's not an original kind of idea, but they haven't actually, you know, they've not nabbed it from anyone. It isn't a clone as such. They haven't nabbed the Candy Crush. They haven't nabbed Saga. They haven't nabbed. He's got a lot of press because of the story of his mother dying of leukemia 5 months before it came out. And you know, and it
I didn't like that bit of it. That sounded a bit
well,
X-Factor,
yeah,
didn't
exactly.
it?
And he's put out this open letter saying he's been fighting this for 3 years. He's been fighting it for 3 years because he started the fight. It's too wishy-washy. Anyone can make a game with candy, and you can't say they're all copying. He's certainly not the first guy to put candy in a game. You know, it's...
Well, no, of course not.
I find it odd that we're all talking about people wanting to take candy away from one another, and every party...
Make it good.
Okay. And every party, each of the parties... They are being babies.
Oh, they're acting like babies.
They're acting like... And so you might say that they're trying to take candy away from a baby. And it should be easy, but it's not. It's proving challenging in a court of law. And that's a joke.
Wonder what's out and about this week. Out and about this week, we've got a whole bunch of stuff for you, starting with Tengami, which is out on iPhone and iPad right now. It is an extremely good-looking papercraft puzzler type game in which you take control of a Japanese fellow who's underneath a blossom tree, and he sort of wakes up, and then you have to tap the screen to guide him towards doorways and things, and then work out puzzles in order to access new areas. The hook of all of this is that it plays out or is designed like a pop-up book. From the olden days, you see, back in the days before Kindles, kids, we had these books, right? And you used to open them physically with your hands. And they had pop-up books when you were kids. So you'd open up and this big castle or whatever would go, wa-bum, this cardboard creation would appear before your very eyes as if by papery magic. And the whole game looks like that. So you open the book at the beginning and boom, the scene pops up and the guy's in it. And then there are items in the actual game itself. So there might be a staircase or a bridge or something, but it'll appear as just a kind of blinking hotspot. And you put your finger on it and you drag it from right to left and it opens up like a pop-up book. It's really, really gorgeous. We've reviewed it and it appears that it's perhaps more style than it is substance. Looks cracking, but, and I played the first 10 minutes or 15 minutes of this. It's very, very slow, like really slow. Like it's all, if it has that Zen vibe anyway, because it's all kind of Japanese settings and it looks like sort of very lovely and stuff, but you double tap to get the guy to move, and the guy is in no hurry at all. And from what Mark says, some of the puzzles are very either minimal and they're not really there, or they're incredibly obtuse. And really, really tough, to the point where Mark has had to email the developer and say, how do you get past this bit? Which, ladies and gentlemen, is games journalism.
That's always a good sign.
But you've played it, haven't you, Peter?
Yeah, and that was one of the issues I levied at the lovely person who was showing it to me at the time.
What, too tough or too slow?
Well, a bit of both, really. Like, I was very nice, and I said, it's a very relaxed pace, isn't it? Because that's one way of seeing it. And the whole, like, what are you meant to do next thing has been in the game since Resed of last year, so eight months ago now when I saw it. And I was kind of assured that, oh, yeah, we're definitely going to be doing some more subtle visual tricks to just kind of make things a little bit more obvious. And I kind of thought, really? Because that's going to really compromise... Like, that's either going to compromise your vision or... Like, look naff. Like, I don't see how either of those things is going to really work out. So
he needs to get a shift on, the guy, basically. He's walking so slowly, and you have to do backtracking. So he walks all the way slowly in one direction, and you do a thing. Then you have to plod all the way slowly back again. And it's a real shame, because it looks stunning. Go and see. There's videos up on Pocket Gamer. There's a video up on AppSpy. The review will be up soon as well. It looks phenomenal. It's absolutely gorgeous. And I adore the art style. And the music's lovely. The production values are huge. But... according to Mark, it doesn't stand up. It is more sort of style than substance, which is kind of a shame. It got a bronze award, saying that it is, you know, maybe worth playing, but be prepared for very, very, very slow pace. I think it's available right now for £1.99, $2.99, or maybe it might be more, £2.99, five. Maybe it's £100 and some bitcoins as well. I don't know. No, it's £3 or $5, and you can get it right now. Also out this week, Bug Heroes 2, which I have played, and I was very pleasantly surprised by. I never played the first one. Did either of you?
No.
Okay, good. That makes you feel slightly less bad. But it is a third-person tower defense combat shooter blaster thing.
All right.
Yeah, which is unusual, I suppose. Apparently, the first game was very well regarded, and looking back, I can kind of see why. It plays really well. It controls extremely well. Whereas first-person controls I usually don't take to, because, you know, first-person, third-person, they use a similar system with invisible dual thumbsticks. Here, it's really well implemented. I feel totally in control of the movements of the bugs and, the camera as well. So basically, you take control of these two-man squads. When I say man, I mean insect. So you start off with like a cricket ladybug thing and a spider. And you have to troll around these 3D maps, blowing up other creatures who are coming and attacking you. You're using swords or katanas or guns or whatever. But you're also defending your base. Your base, which you can go up and mount turrets onto using items of scrap that you find around the place. So it's got this tower defense element and also this combat element. And it's a multiplayer online battle arena thing. So you can do online multiplayer too. The only problem with it so far appears to be that it is free to play and the original one wasn't. And that's caused people to, as they always do, get upset about this. I haven't played it long enough to see what the limitations are. I don't know what they're restricting to make it free to play, what they're trying to get you to buy. So I won't pass judgment yet, but the review will be up on Pocket Gamer probably now. And there's first play videos and all that stuff, so you can go and check it out for yourself. Next up, Coldfire Keep, which I'm going to swing over to you, Peter, because I have played this, but you've played it more than me.
It is a... first-person dungeon crawler in the vein of Ultima Underworld or Legend of Grimrock, which is slightly more modern take, I suppose.
See, I thought Eye of the Beholder. That's where it took me.
Eye of the Beholder. I don't really know old PC and like that kind of game. Like, that's a really big gap in my knowledge, like old PC games.
Anything before Sonic the Hedgehog 2 was just a blur to you.
And even then, Sonic the Hedgehog 2 was a blur. He was the blue blur. It would be funny if I got that out the first time. So you wander around this sort of grid of a dungeon and then strike things with your swords, and it's very hard, and you solve puzzles and that sort of thing. It's very good.
If you haven't played one of these before, it's one of those ones where you walk on a grid system, so you flick forward and you just go junk and jump forward, and you turn in 90 degree angles and then keep moving forward, which is what first person games used to be like before Doom and Wolfenstein and everything. You just had this like click, 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 as if there were series of still images. Whereas this one is animated, you do move forward, but it harks back to that old school system, which have some people going, oh, awesome, and have younger people going, what? Mm. Why would I, what?
It's very good.
Is it?
Yeah, it's very good. Like, it's incredibly hardcore, and like, it's not for everybody, not in the least. It's, you know, it is for the kind of people that go, oh, I remember games like that, or, oh, yeah. I would love to explore a game like that, and, it's for them. But it serves that audience well.
Fair enough. Well, you can grab it on iPhone and iPad right now. It's £2.99 or $4.99. Another one that's out, sticking with the online theme that we mentioned from Bug Heroes 2, Fright Fight, which is another kind of battle arena game. This time it's been modelled on the Super Smash Brothers style. So it's got a few floating platforms and you've got characters that are beating the pants off of one another. But those characters are kind of horror icons. So you've got the Grim Reaper and you've got a Yeti and you've got a werewolf and something else, a vampire probably. And to look at the screenshots, it does look very much like Super Smash Brothers. We've tried to have a look at this, but the problem is no one was playing it, were they?
Yeah, everyone.
Which made it slightly difficult.
It's only out in New Zealand, isn't it?
I think it's out globally now.
Oh, is it? Ooh.
That was this Thursday. So now it's been soft launch in New Zealand for a while, like weeks. But even then, we turned it on and it was like, no one's here.
Yeah, no one is playing. It's, you know, wow, they're called ballerina fighters, aren't they? Or something like that.
Is
that
MOBAs, multiplayer online battle arenas.
Is that what they're called?
Yep.
Hmm.
You're taking issue with the acronym or the genre?
Yeah. What?
Both.
A fright fight.
Fright fight, yes.
It's not a MOBA.
Isn't it? I thought that's what it was called.
No, it's not a MOBA. A MOBA is more like Dota or League of Legends.
I know that this is like in a 2D plane and everything, but isn't it the same principle? I.e. there's a whole bunch of fighters all battling one another online.
I don't think so. I mean,
in an arena.
It is doing that, yeah. But like you wouldn't say, I don't know, multi-online battle arena. I don't know. I don't think you would class it as a MOBA.
Okay, then. Multiplayer online brawler, then.
Okay, that's fine. Now we're happy. I was going to say,
that conversation was so hot. Can I just say that?
Sorry, yeah.
I was the sexiest conversation I've ever heard.
I was rubbing my nipples at the same time. No,
acronyms
called,
get me hot.
I think they're called ballerina fighters.
Ballerina fighters. I haven't seen ballerinas fighting. I thought they were a peaceful race.
I think.
Although I wouldn't like to be kicked by a ballerina because they do have those toes.
Well. Oh, that is terrible. Super Smash Brothers. Do you know what? I'm going to my favourite website called Wikipedia.
Oh, really?
I'm sure I've heard them be referred to as ballerina brawlers or something like that. Basically, you're trying to knock out other people, and it is kind of a dance, basically. You're trying to dance from one area to another. And
oh, so you are literally using the word ballerina as in dancers?
Yes.
I thought you were slurring the term battle arena.
No.
Like a drunken person.
No.
He's not drunk yet.
Because have you ever seen like Super Smash Brothers?
Oh, yeah. No, I understand the principle now you mention it, that it does look quite sort of balletic in its concentration. Yeah. But I honestly thought because we were saying battle arena, you were going ballerina.
No. Like, I genuinely do think, I do think it is derived from the fact that when you see it at, like, high speed, when, like, you see actual players, it is like a dance. I might be completely wrong.
But well, call us out in the comments section.
Yeah, please do.
All right, well, it's out now, and apparently no one's playing it. More people will probably be playing it now. It's been released worldwide, so you can go and check it out. It is also free to play.
Mm.
I think of the four characters you can choose, you choose one at the beginning of the game, and then it locks out the other ones. So you're stuck with that character until you've either grinded your way through I don't know how much, or you cough up to unlock the other characters. I think that's how it works. But you can try it for yourself right now. I'm going to talk about this one because I've played this a bit as well, and I played the previous game. It's called Okwoni, and Rob's reviewed it. And I've played it a bit, and it comes from the same guy who produced Hiver Sairs. Did you play that, anyone?
It rings a bell.
Okay, Hiver Sairs was actually, in the same way as Coldfire Keep, is a first-person grid-based puzzle game or adventure game. Hiver Sairs was that as well, only it was in stark black and white, incredibly, incredibly stylish, and very, very opaque in its puzzle design. It was one of those ones where you really need to get a pen and pencil and plot out all the routes and remember where you've been. And there was no instructions, there's no English text, it's all written in peculiar codes and scrawls, and you had to find your way out. And it was tough as hell until you got into the flow of it, but very, very atmospheric. The follow-up to that game is Okwoni, which is slightly different in its styling. It is an isometric grid-based game in which you can see individual rooms. You start off as this peculiar-looking, I think, bird creature with a long neck, and he's in an office setting, apparently, and you kind of flick the screen diagonally to move him between blocks. And there are doors, and you go through the doors, and you just appear in another room and carry on moving. And at least at first, you're going and trying to grab things from photocopy machines and stuff like that. But the art style's phenomenal. Good looking. It's as if it's all been drawn with ink and pencil. But again, there's no instructions, and the puzzles are so kind of obscure. And Rob's reviewed it and said that it you know, treads this funny line between being incredibly good looking and engaging at times, and then also just being maddeningly deliberately obtuse to the point where it's going, look how smart I am, and twizzling its little moustache.
Is this an art game?
Well, I mean, sort of. I guess the previous one was. But it's also an art game with a very, very hardcore puzzle slant, like old-fashioned puzzle slant, which might appeal to people. I mean, I'm drawn in by the visuals, but it is like, very, very difficult.
It does look really, really cool. But again, it from everything I've seen, and obviously I haven't gone hands-on with it, you know, it does look like one of those like games of sort of style over substance. And it feels a little bit like indie games are kind of going that way at the moment with mobile. There's, what is it? The Us 2 guys are going a little bit. They've always had that kind of, you know, style and presentation over everything else. And Badland, you know.
Yeah, Badland I'd agree with. But Monument Valley, which Keith has played and we talked about, looks pimp.
It does indeed look hench.
Keith's played a game that I haven't played.
I know, that's...
And it's one of the games I actually want to play.
But do you know what I mean? Like that sort of indie...
Yeah, I know. It's
trying to be the next kind of...
I'll tell you what,
look how
it is.
Nice.
I reckon it's because, and I might be wrong here, but I'm probably not. I reckon it's because those are the games that the console press cover.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's what it is, because I've seen reviews for Tengami up in your Eurogamer and your other big sites. If it looks a bit swish,
yeah,
they
yeah.
go for it. If it looks like a standard mobile game, they don't bother.
It's the same as when Edge back in the early noughties, but you'd always get in Edge a random Japanese game you'd never heard of. I'd never heard of. They'd been reviewed because they thought that made them look cultured if they reviewed it. Even though they gave it like 4 or something, there would always be one in there because they think, oh, well, we must cover this, even though absolutely no one's heard of it and doesn't buy it.
That is classic Edge. but like, yes, actually, I think you might be on something there. And Apple tends to look for games that are, like, to highlight games that are, like, really well put, like...
Attractive.
Very, yeah,
very
really.
Slick-looking.
Like, kind of all ties in with that Apple ethos of beautiful, slick-moving work.
Because you know that, for example, Eurogamer isn't going to review Bug Heroes 2, even if it's brilliant.
Poor Bug Heroes 2.
No, it might be good. I'm holding promise for Bug Heroes 2. But Eurogamer aren't going to review that. But they certainly reviewed The Room 2, you know?
Yeah. Because
it's that kind of game.
You seem more of a real game to them.
Yeah, it's the mobile game that it's okay for console gamers to like.
Yeah.
Oh, that's... I really hope that's not the case.
No, me too, I agree. But I think that's the way that some of the more mainstream press, they're very, very selective about which mobile games they go for, which is understandable because there's thousands and you have to curate the best. But I think if you design a game that looks like Tengami, they're definitely going to cover that because they go, whoa, look at that. It could be a console game. It's almost a proper game.
So do you think the defining moment is if at any point about the game you can say it looks like a console game, like, or it could be a console game, I should say. Do you think that's the point that people go, oh yeah, we should cover this?
I think it helps the case.
Yeah.
So, and I might be completely wrong there, incidentally.
Oh well, it means that we've got jobs.
Yeah, hooray, hooray for jobs.
Come sit upon my throne of games.
Here we are again. It's time to sit upon the throne of games. Three of us this week. So, Peter, you're going to go first. Park it, son.
Fantastic. Let me just sit it down. Oh, no, wait. I'm going to stand up high And I'm going to tell you that the Pocket Gamer Awards 2014 are now in full swing.
Shield warning!
Yes, yes. The upper management would like you to know things. And I am their voice.
Anti-shield drones in.
Yeah.
I'm going to take you down, Robocop style.
So, Joao, the man with a nice voice, he says that we should talk about the Pocket Gamer Awards 2014, and we should, because they're very cool, and they are your opportunity to vote on what happened last year. The good games happened last year. We said earlier, didn't we, that good
Salt
games were last
BAFTAs.
Year. Oh, BAFTAs! Just made a side of my hand. But yeah, the Pocket Gamer Awards are more important than them, so you should vote on them. So you want to go to pocketgamer.co.uk/PG Awards 2014, or you could search about on the website or search Google. That'll do it. And you can vote on all of your favourite games: iOS, Android, 3DS, Vita, Windows Phone.
I don't know what that laugh was about.
action, casual, adventure, all sorts. You can even vote for your favourite publisher, your favourite developer. Oh, but who would I even vote for? I don't even know what games came out. I don't even know what I would vote for. Well, maybe you want to vote for Gemini Rue as best adventure, or under 3DS, you might want to vote for Brave Default Flying Fairy or whatever, or Chillingo as your favorite publisher.
Lots of categories there.
Lots of categories. Lots of people to vote for. I'm not trying to sway you either way. You should go there. You should vote for them. I'm going to pimp this like pretty much every week. So I might come up with a jingle, actually.
We have a very strict vetting process, I warn you.
Yeah, all right. go and do that and make the people who pay our wages happy,
even if they don't make us happy with those wages. Yeah. Oh well. All right. Can you talk about a game now?
All right. I'll talk about do you know what? I've started playing a video game called Dead Man Something's Dead Man.
I call shenanigans. You haven't played anything.
I haven't. No, Dead Man Cross.
Okay.
Dead Man's Cross. That's I think what it's called.
Why is he cross?
This is
dead.
Well, that's the joke I make in my review that will go out soon. And it's from the people who made Guardian Cross.
Oh, what? The Square Enix Final Fantasy spin-off?
Yes. So
check me out with my nose.
That team has gone off and made Dead... I think it's Dead Man's Cross. I think that's what it's called. And I'm sort of starting to play that. I'm doing a week-long review for it. And I haven't played it too much yet, but it's basically, it's a gallery shooter where you stand about and don't do much, and you have a sniper rifle for some unbeknown reason during the zombie apocalypse. You're not a soldier or anything, you're just this random kid. And then when you shoot them, a card pings out of them, and instead of it's just saying undead human being every time, it says things like postman and alligator and general. And sexy nurse. Because I know. It was a bit weird. And
way to perv up the personalized slaughter.
Yeah. And I think this is why the big websites don't cover all the mobiles.
I think we're missing a trick. Yeah.
And then you take those cards that you've shot in the face and you battle them by taking decks of cards and throwing them at zombies, sort of. And then you have battles with them. It's all very Rage of Bahama in this second half of the game.
It sounds a lot like Guardian Cross, actually.
It's a lot like Guardian Cross.
Because that had the section where you're a sniper rifle and you shoot the little creatures and then you get the cards and then you battle them.
It's it's that, but with zombies and like a really incoherent storyline. And on top of that, it's got some pretty good art and good production values, like you kind of expect from a Square Enix joint.
Yeah.
But the story is utter nonsense. Like, I guess the reason I wanted to talk about it is, A, I haven't really been playing that much because I've been busy on another project, which I'll probably pimp next week. Mm-hmm. Very exciting. I'll also talk about Spain. I'm going to MWC. My life is really, really exciting.
All right, Marco Polo.
The reason I wanted to sort of bring it up is I'm getting kind of sick and tired of free-to-play games not having decent storylines. like, I don't know whether or not it's the payment system or, like, the fact that they're not really interested in story because they're just interested in getting lots and lots of users, and you kind of, you don't want to put anybody off with having a weird story that you have to kind of think about, and, you know...
I'll tell you what it is. It's because they're not allowed to end. It's because they just are designed to go on and on and on and on.
Keep a story going. Like, you can, all, you know, you can do episodic stuff. Like,
say, not even episodic. Like some games are just designed to keep playing the same areas over and over again.
No, I know. But, like, say, for example, you've got a game with, let's go with Marvel, right? And I know there's been Marvel card battlers and so forth. Probably these are a good example. The Marvel card battler that came out recently, like, you could just keep writing stories because they're just archetypes, right? Like, you just keep adding content onto it. And that's a decent enough example of a free-to-play game using story. But so many of them are just so cripplingly weak that... As a reviewer, and I play like probably about two of these every week, like two free-to-play games every single week, and I just find myself skipping the text. Like, you start, you read it for 5 minutes, 5-10 minutes, and if it isn't grabbing your attention, you just think, ah, sod off. Like, skip, 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 skip. And you just think, like, why bother? Like, FIFA every year doesn't bother putting a story into it because it doesn't need it. It doesn't have this pretense that, oh, there's characters and all this sort of stuff.
I would love that. They should do it.
But... You know, like Pro Evolution, for example, did try to do a story thing at one point by having a, you know, recreate famous goals from the past. And like that sort of element of, you know, an injection of narrative was quite interesting. But like none of these free to play games even bother. Like it just feels like don't hire. Well, clearly they haven't written, but like hired a writer. But like just don't bother writing it. Just give me numbers and a character and some like customization and then let me just get on with this game.
Give me an Excel sheet and a crayon.
Yeah, like seriously though, like they ultimately are that, and having this pretense that there's some sort of fascinating story that I should somehow care about, or you should somehow interrupt my grinding of the video game to get more strength points or whatever, like interrupting it with some naff still frame storyboarded attempt at drama. I just think to myself, like, pull your resources, put them into something else. Jesus.
But you see, what you've described there is exactly how I feel about every single JRPG ever made that I've ever even attempted to start up. It's that same terrible script, awful, loads of stuff I've got to scroll through that makes no sense whatsoever kind of appeal.
Well, it's funny you should mention that.
Yay!
Pop off the throne there, Peter. I'm jumping on. I've been playing Final Fantasy VI. Which is perhaps the pinnacle of that JRPG thing with all the text and the nonsense story you were just talking about there, Keith. So, I reviewed it for AppSpy, and we reviewed it on PocketGamer, and we both came to roughly the same conclusion, as it turns out, in completely different areas, which is, it's still Final Fantasy VI, hooray, but some of the new stuff is a bit weird and off-putting and that. So, if you haven't played Final Fantasy VI, it's arguably the best Final Fantasy game of the entire oeuvre. People will argue between 6 and 7, and some people like to say 9 or 10, but they're wrong. It's really big and massive and has a ridiculously large cast of characters, and they go all over the place, and it's full of wit and invention and castles that walk and burrow, and it's just really good. And it makes me feel about 12. And the soundtrack's amazing. It's probably the best of all of them. Even better than Final Fantasy VII, I would say. And Square Enix, obviously, as it's one of the most successful, was eventually going to get around to buffing it up and sticking it on the App Store. And it's finally done it. And obviously, it costs £10.99 or $16 or whatever it is, which it does. Because screw you guys, basically. You can get it on PSN for about $9.99. So you can get it cheaper on your console and without the new interfaces, but screw you, you're going to pay more because it's Square Enix on mobile. That's what they do. But for that extra $5 or whatever, you're going to get slightly upgraded graphics that look a bit weird.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not a full-on, like, they've remade some of the older games in full 3D. It's not that, but at the same time, it's not the original pixel art that you expect. So they've made everything a bit softer. They've added some HD backgrounds, kind of. It's a bit weird and it's a bit jarring, and like the character art doesn't sit particularly well against the backgrounds, I don't think. It's not by any means going to ruin the game at all, and it looks similar enough to the original things where everyone's perfectly recognizable. And like I say, it's just like, you know, on some emulators where you can put that softening thing on, where it looks a bit like it's like that, but taken to the nth degree. So the characters have been softened, but the backgrounds have been sharpened up, and it's a bit of a weird. But it's once you start play it for like 20 minutes, you sort of forget about it. The other thing that's perhaps more noticeable is that the interface has been changed. So whereas previously you control everything with a joypad and a cursor, and you're switching between, like, you know, you choose your character and then choose the whether you're going to fight or attack or use an item or use magitech, and then you hit your X and it will pop open another menu and you choose whatever you want to do, blah, blah, blah. And you've got the little timers kind of clicking up in the corner where the active window will suddenly go bing when your character's charged and can perform an attack. For the iOS version, they've changed it, and you now have columns which appear at the bottom of the screen, the name of the character at the top, and as your character's timer counts down to when it can perform a new action, the column kind of creeps up the screen, like tick, 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 until it's ready, almost like a toast popping up and going bing when it reaches the top. It kind of does that, so your three characters will all be in a line at the bottom, and they'll all pop up. And that's a way of visually kind of displaying what would be a very, very small... If it was a counter, like a little white line like it is in the previous games, it would be teeny tiny. So I guess that's their way of getting past it. And underneath that, you've got the columns of the options. So your fight, your magitech, whatever. But you can only fit about three of them on screen at one time. So you have to scroll the little list and then hit it to go to the next screen. And then that opens up a much bigger screen and you know, menu pop up. And you can select things from there. That's a bit fiddly, especially on like an iPhone or an iPod or something. I found that fiddly and a bit slow, and it definitely slowed me down as I was playing it. Again, you do get used to it. It's just not quite the experience that you're used to. So that's a point against it, I think. And there's apparently, I haven't noticed this because I haven't played through the whole thing yet, but apparently there are a couple of errors in translation. They've retranslated the game, so things are a bit different this time, and there are a couple of spelling mistakes. C-, see me afterwards, Square Enix. But I think they fixed that in subsequent updates, so it's fine. But yeah, the whole game is there as you remember it, but slightly different visuals and slightly different menu system. Neither of which I think benefit the game. I think the old menu system's better, and I think the old visuals are better.
Is it a game that you could convince Keith to play?
No.
No? Like, what is it about... Because I agree with you, I don't think Keith would play it, but I think there are some JRPGs that Keith would enjoy. But what do you
really?
Yeah, absolutely. What do you think it is about 6 that is particularly JRPG-y?
JRPGE. Well, the plot is massively melodramatic, as all these things are. And again, it's something that comes over in translation. You just have to take any interest in Japanese culture and watch any amount of manga movies or anime series or whatever, and see the way in which they're conducted. I.e., very often two people standing across the screen from one another shouting the plot at each other,
yeah,
in very, very dramatic terms. And that's how their mythology works. That's how they communicate story. It's a different cultural thing. So when that comes over to the West and they translate it, it comes off as incredibly soap opera-like and unnatural to us. But at the same time, it's got bags and bags of character in it. And it's one of the more like touching of the stories, I think, because you've got this girl at the center of it all, who is unconscious at first. She's being used by the Empire to harness her magitech powers and whatnot. And then you get that kind of, again, plot essential amnesia. She wakes up and all the magic's gone from the world, and everyone's trying to get hold of her because she still has the magical mojo. And it's plot lines between brothers who are separated that end up working together, and she, you know, finds her way through the world. And it's actually quite nice, and it's not as ridiculous as some of the other ones. I don't think it's not quite so histrionic, so maybe like if you're going to get into any of them, it would be this one, but I still think there's no way Keith's going to go for it. It's just not realistic. If you've never played it and you really want to play it on iOS and you can't be asked to download it on a console or something, then go for it. And if you've still got the misty-eyed nostalgia and you want to play it through again, then by all means go for it, but you will be surprised by the menu system, and you may not like it as much. Mm-hmm. Ideally, just play it on the PSN or something, where it looks like the old game and you can control it normally. But if you're just an iOS person, grab it, by all means. If you happen to be rich, obviously.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's a tenner for a game that's 30 years old. So there you go. Anyway, Keithy baby, you've been playing a game that I've never even heard of before.
I've been playing the new up and coming quiet indie hit that I think is going to, you know, maybe reach a niche audience at some point.
Mm-hmm.
The last 3 weeks, I've been playing Flappy Bird.
Oh,
what?
I'll have to open up the App Store and see if I can download that.
You do it. Do it. And I have actually been playing Flappy Bird. Been playing on and off throughout the entire period, having resisted it initially. While it was gaining traction on social networks, purely because it was gaining traction on social networks, and any game that gains traction on social networks, I tend to avoid.
Is immediately deserving of your derision, as yes. I noticed, because you were quite like, whatever, Flappy Bird, about this at first.
Yeah, it's funny, and I know a few of my friends did exactly the same. Well, or even worse, I have a couple of friends who both downloaded it and then removed it quite quickly, and then a few days later put it back on. And not when it was announced it was getting pulled. They just kind of thought, it's one of those games. I'm not going to explain it to the world because the world knows it better than I do. But it's one of those games where when you die, you feel like you could have done better, and that's the hook in that. You feel like, oh no, I could have done that. Actually, I'll do it again because I won't make that mistake again. And obviously, at some point, you do. Mm-hmm. I've done a complete 180 about it, and having been to Amsterdam last week, where Flappy Bird came up in every single talk that I went into and was just being talked about constantly, not always positively, but constantly in some form or other, I do think it's unintentionally genius because the balance of it, it is so harsh, but in the way, actually, once you overcome the hurdle, it then also suddenly seems so easy. And like I say, you die and you never feel like it's beyond you. You always feel like, actually, no, I could do that. And so you start again. If you know, if it started to get ridiculously hard and the green things started slamming into each other and spikes popped up and, you know, if it radically changed the dynamic the further you got and it definitely got harder, then you'd think, oh, no, I can't do this anymore. But, you know, it doesn't get any harder. Essentially, it just waits for you to make a mistake, which at some point you always will. And you always then think your brain goes, well, you won't make that mistake next time. You know what to do. I think it is a shame that it isn't there anymore. And it has a very limited lifespan in that, you know, in a few months' time, I don't think I will be playing it. And I'm not, you know, well, obviously, anyone who hasn't already got it won't be playing it, definitely. And there has been this rush of games incredibly similar. And some of them are better than others. I've also been playing Splashy Fish, which I've determined is one of the better ones, actually, almost gets the rhythm the same. And there are people actually openly pushing, they've worked out the exact, you know, dynamics of Flappy Bird and how you can exactly mirror it so that the way he flies and everything is exactly the same. It's a kind of sad tale, an inevitable sad tale that this guy was kind of almost bullied into pulling it from the store. I'm not sure why he just didn't leave Twitter, actually, instead. I think that might have... I mean, he was getting a lot of abuse and got even more abuse when he announced it was being pulled. I would have been inclined just to leave Twitter rather than do anything else because, you know, he did do a few updates for it, but it's not a game that really needs updating. You know, the ad network takes care of itself, so there's always going to be a fraction of money rolling in as long as people are playing it. And, you know, it didn't need to add levels or anything, so you could have just left it. But, you know, it's one of them things that has come in, you know, absolutely out of nowhere. And the problem we have now is that because it's the first game in a long time to come out of nowhere and shoot to the top without any visible form of promotion, really, there are going to be, well, there already are scores of developers trying to do the same thing, and they're not going to do it because I interviewed Molyneux in Amsterdam and brought it up. He actually brought it up when he was on stage as well. He has a score of 29, if you're wondering.
Oh, okay. I got to 22, I think.
He's one better than me, annoyingly. Yeah. But I mean, he was, you know, he nailed it on the head. Really, he compared it to the Blair Witch Project. Which, you know, at the end of the 90s was a, you know, film made with a comparatively tiny budget to other Hollywood films shot on handy cameras. And his interesting point was that Hollywood didn't try and do that again. You know, a few people did, but the movies were rubbish. But in general, people didn't take that as a cue that all movies from now on were going to be shot on handheld cameras and shot in that way. And, you know, he said it wasn't until Paranormal Activity came along, you know, almost 20 years later that people then started to explore that kind of way of doing things again. And then in a comparative way, it kind of shows the naivety of mobile games in that you have something which does something slightly differently and comes out of nowhere and hits the top. And immediately everyone else thinks that that's the answer and that's what they've got to do to get their big hit. And, you know, it doesn't happen in, you know, when you have a one-hit wonder in the charts, you don't often find scores of other artists chucking in what they were doing and trying to mimic what was number one that week. You know, it's quite strange.
I don't know. I think that music certainly moves in scales. As soon as the dubstep thing became big, everyone sticks on a wobbly bass. And there were lot of found footage films that came out after Blair.
That was more of a general trend. What I mean is if Mr. Blobby had another number one, you wouldn't suddenly find all these respected bands and artists putting on pink and yellow dot suits and jumping around in their videos trying to, you know.
I would like to see that Coldplay video.
there is an understanding in movies, television and film that things like this can happen, that you can get something that for whatever reason, whether people are buying it, you know, downloading it ironically or whatever, come out of nowhere and are their own little moment. And when the moment is over, it's over. And they don't try and take advantage of that because they understand why it exists. Whereas mobile games, even more so than the other part of games, you know, it wasn't a trend. It's just a tiny little game. And it's, you know, it is a one-hit wonder that's come out of nowhere. And now, such is the way of mobile games, that everyone thinks that's the key to it and that's what they should be doing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I know I won't name any names, but I've had conversations with developers who, in previous conversations, have frowned upon any kind of cloning or any kind of, you know, and they've been openly saying, oh yeah, we're making a Flappy Bird clone. This is what we're doing at the moment. and you just think, well, why? Why would you do that? Because by the time it gets out anyway, we'll have all moved on to something else.
Old news.
It's very strange, but it is a special little thing. And I'm not sure when I will remove it from my iPod. Maybe not for quite a long time. And I do think, kind of, we were touching about snobbery. You know, it's not a game that was ever going to be reviewed in Edge, although that would be quite amusing.
I'd like to see the 2,000-word review.
Yeah, I'd love to see it stretch out that long. But I don't have any time for anyone who dismisses it, actually, because I think it is the perfect mobile game in that it fills a tiny slot and is incredibly engaging with a very simple idea and the way it works to keep you in that loop. And it's not a horrible loop. You might swear or whatever when you do die, but you're still actively enjoying it because it's such a simple idea.
It is games.
Yeah.
Like, I'd be inclined to agree. I mean, I wouldn't get hooked into it in the same way, despite what the video I put on AppSpy said. I didn't get hooked into it or addicted, but like, I did start playing it and then looked up and, an hour and a half's gone by. Like, and that simple compulsion, like, loop thing. It is like, like I said last week, one of those Wario mini games.
It's balloon fight.
Yeah, yeah. It's just one of those little games that happens to nail it in such a way that, I'm just going to carry on playing then. And that is games. A simple challenge that you want to overcome that you keep coming back to. Pure games.
And without wanting to get too deep about it, it did make me have a genuine, considering only a few weeks ago we had a big indie pitch where we saw, you know, 40-odd games.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, what would I have done if this guy had turned up with Flappy Bird? And I was thinking of all kinds of things I would have said to him. That, you know, yeah, no, it's a nice little idea. I like the way, like, the, you know, the graphical look of it. But, you know, it's never going to be anything. You know, you need to make more of it. There needs to be something. And all these talks we have about retention and monetization and all this stuff. You then kind of think something like this happens and it does rocky foundations of why people play games in the first place. And are we looking so deep for answers these days that we're actually missing the really simple things that are right in front of us? But that is getting ridiculously deep and makes me sound like an idiot. So
it makes you sound like someone who actually plays games, which would never be the case. But Keith, we'll dispel that immediately.
I've got better things to do with my time.
Exactly. Good stuff.
Listen to Mr. Blobby Records. that reference is going to be completely lost on half our audience anyway.
It is. Go and Google Mr. Blobby and then be appalled that Keith knows or mentioned anything about it.
I love Mr. Blobby.
All right, then, we shall wrap this podcast up. Thanks for joining us. Nice to have the gang back together as well. Thank you, Peter and Keith. And we'll be back. Yeah, the gang's back. Back in, what is it?
The British gang.
British, exactly. Back to the British Isles. Talking about British games. We'll come back next week. We'll be here once again. More mobile news, more mobile games, all that good stuff. Thanks for joining us. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.